Welcome to Inside ProMedica, your path to wellness. Brought to you by ProMedica Charles and Virginia Hickman Hospital, where your health is our mission. Each month, we bring you insights from leading medical experts, the latest advancements in care, and essential health tips to keep you and your family well. Let's get started.
I want to welcome back Dr. Geetson, and we've been talking about senior health and the importance and health challenges that are involved with adults. And Dr. Geetson, we're just getting ready to discuss the technology changing in geriatric care. I know there's an emphasis on trying to keep people at home as long as possible, and there are some services that will come to your house and help take care of you. But a lot of better screening, maybe, is that a good word to use as far as technology changes?
Well, I think the technology that is more commonly employed now, and it started with COVID, was the ability to start to do telehealth visits. Mm-hmm. So in the past, that just wasn't possible. But with COVID, the government made accommodations. And so now people can use electronics to have visits with providers. Mm-hmm. This allows people to address medical concerns when they might not be able to and to go through care coordination. Now, for the older population, it had been a little bit of a challenge up front adapting to this, but people are adaptable and they have families and friends that can help them do this. So what we're seeing now is that an increasing reliance on video visits for things that are relatively simple and straightforward, for follow-up appointments to check in on how people responded to medications, and it gives people the flexibility that, look, you know, it's hard for me to get out of my home. Hey, the weather's bad. It's dangerous. It's slippery. I'm afraid of a slip and fall.
Right.
Or, you know, there's a lot of sick people in the waiting room at the doctor's office. I don't want to be there.
Exactly.
And so people can have health concerns addressed from the comfort of home.
Mm-hmm.
So increasingly it's being adopted. The other thing that's happening is that by federal mandate, all of the electronic health records have to give patients access to their own records. And that includes the results of laboratory testing, x-rays, and other studies, but also actual ability to look at their own health record and identify what's accurate, but more importantly, what's inaccurate, and communicate that information back.
I know I used my mother's ProMedica, my chart, when I was her caregiver. And then I could keep track of different levels that were happening with her liver and things like that that she was having a problem with. To me, it was invaluable. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to stay on top of things as well as I did.
I think that's an important thing to recognize, is that it's just not for the patient, but it's for the extended family. And when people can't be there, the ability for families to look in and see what was actually discussed and the results, I think, makes people feel a little more comfortable about the care that's being delivered.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Many people have heard the terms advance directive and living will. Can you help explain those a little bit for us? Because there is a difference between the two things.
There is. One is actually a part of another. So an advance directive is basically a document that tells your family and your medical team what you would want if you couldn't speak for yourself. It includes or can include things like a living will, naming someone to make medical decisions for you, that we call power of attorney. It allows you to express your wishes about cardiopulmonary resuscitation and other life-saving treatments, and it gives you the option of indicating whether you would want to donate organs. It's not just for end-of-life situations, though. It can be used in times when people have fallen into a coma, or should they have advanced dementia, or a severe injury, anything that might really compromise the person's ability to speak for themselves. The idea is that you want to make sure that your wishes are known well ahead of time so that your loved ones aren't left guessing.
Right.
A living will is one specific part of an advance directive. It focuses on what you would want if you became very sick, you were unlikely to recover, and unable to speak your wishes. And this would then specify whether you wanted things like cardiopulmonary resuscitation done, whether you would want to be kept alive on a breathing machine, or whether you would want to be kept alive by feeding tubes. A living will gives instructions, but it doesn't name a person who you grant the authority to do this. It basically gives guidance. That's what the power of attorney is for.
Right.
And so it's critically important. Even when you're young, when your health is good, because accidents happen, people fall off roofs, there are car accidents, and having somebody to represent you when you can't represent yourself is critical. And it's critical because when you need it, you need it.
Yes.
And we can't go backwards and get this if you are no longer competent or able to speak. It makes a huge difference when we have people in the hospital because very often in the heat of the moment, we need somebody to give informed consent.
Right. Well, and it's a conversation that you need to have with your spouse or your significant other or with your children because they may not agree with what you want for yourself.
The critical element there is those conversations.
Yes.
And if you come to believe that your spouse or your child will not execute your wishes, there's nothing that legally grants them the right if you don't grant it to them.
Correct.
And this also becomes a stumbling block when we try to get patients situated in nursing homes when long-term care is needed, because nursing homes often want to know who is your representative. Mm-hmm. And we run into real problems when we have elderly come in and they are no longer competent. And we run into problems with who actually could speak. And it's a very cumbersome process to go back in the moment to establish guardianship now.
Yeah.
And guardianship takes involvement of the court system and takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up having people lingering in the hospital for extended periods of time until we can get through that process. It's not good for anyone.
Well, and when you have multiple siblings or children, and the children don't all agree, and nobody's been designated, it just causes a lot of hardship that way too. They all want the best for you, but they're coming at it sometimes from different directions.
And you can designate more than one person, which means that you anticipate that they'll cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is that you designate someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because imagine sitting in that position where you're trying to understand what that person is trying to understand what you would want for yourself.
Right.
And these are very often life and death choices.
Mm-hmm.
And they have consequences in terms of family dynamics.
Right.
When you write it down and spell it out for whomever is going to take on that responsibility, you actually relieve them of a huge burden because now they're not making the decision for you. They're executing your decision when you can't speak for yourself.
Exactly. I know with my mother I brought up earlier, I became her medical decision maker, and my sister was a financial decision maker. That way you had a double checking on each other, but I was the one that lived here, and my sister lived in Texas. So it just worked out really, we had other siblings too, but everybody was like, you guys do it, But had my mother not made that decision ahead of time, it could have been very cumbersome to try to decide who's in charge.
It takes the emotion out of some of this.
Definitely.
By having the discussions when there is no crisis and we can all think it through and talk about it.
Exactly.
The other thing that's important to do with advanced directives is actually get them in the hand of your healthcare provider. Our charting system accommodates for putting copies of that in, and when you show up in the emergency room in the heat of the moment, someone can simply click a button and see whether there are advance directives and whether you have placed any restrictions on what you would want.
Yeah, I didn't realize you could put it in the chart.
You absolutely. In fact, many of us carry in the office something called a 5 wishes form. I think sometimes people are afraid of going through the process. They think, well, it sounds legal and I'm going to have to get an attorney and there's going to be expense.
Mm-hmm.
The 5 wishes form can be given to you for free.
Yes.
If you take the time to fill it out, talk to people, and get it notarized, it is a legal binding document.
Yes.
give it to the person that you've designated, give it to your provider so it can be scanned in your chart, mm-hmm. and you've gone a long way towards making sure that your wishes at the end of your life will be honored and that things won't happen to you mm-hmm. that you don't want in your final days.
Exactly. Well, Dr. Geetson, I, for one, have learned a lot because I'm in the older adults phase of my life. And I thought I knew some of these things, but I didn't. So I hope that our listeners have gotten some great information as well and that they, you know, take some time to spend the time with the family or their friends or whoever needs to and talk about these things.
100% agree. Thanks for allowing me to be here.
That's it for this edition of Inside ProMedica, your path to wellness. We hope you've gained valuable insight into the exceptional care and services available at ProMedica Charleston, Virginia Hickman Hospital. For more information or to connect with our healthcare team, visit ProMedica.org/Hickman. You can also listen to these programs as podcasts anytime under the On Air Audio tab at WLEN.com.